retirement of two certificated administrative employees. The second thing that we finished up on is we gave unanimous consent for the vote to authorize moving forward with the resignation, retirement by agreement of an employee, superintendent, or designate to provide all appropriate subsequent notices and otherwise effectuate this process. Since this matter involves a sensitive employment matter, given the need to respect the person's privacies, the board will not be able to comment further on this item, on this matter. And the employee's number is 1312. Okay. So we have comments from the board. Jeff Boone, Frank Crawford, Doug Whittle, Ms. Hasey, Gary Whittle, Randy Resson.
I would just like to take a moment to thank all of our employees for all that they're doing to try to help benefit our kids. I mean, this is tremendous times, and being able to keep children first in your minds and doing what you're doing is just an outstanding job. All the way from the classroom to the administration, every employee we have is going above and beyond, as Mr. Fleury would say. So thank you very much for all that you're doing.
And I would like to report out on the expulsions. By unanimous consent, the board agreed to staff recommendations for the expulsions of EH21-22/39 and EH21-22/40. So now we have comments from our schools, Marisol High School.
Two weeks ago, I talked about upcoming events at Marysville High School. I can proudly say every event was successful, starting with our hallway decoration competition, won by our seniors, following by the homecoming basketball game. Congratulations to our JV girls and boys and our varsity boys basketball team for pulling off a win. Unfortunately, our varsity girls did not win, but they fought a good fight. I would also like to congratulate our Acadeca team. I may be biased because I am on the team, but we have been amazing these past few weeks. Last Saturday, we competed in interviews, speeches, and impromptu. The MHS Acadeca team won yet another county competition, meaning we will be advancing to state. We want to give a big thank you to Dr. Azrani for stopping by and fellowshipping with us. After a long, stressful morning, we could have used a good laugh, and that's what you gave us. We would also like to take the time to recognize our coach, Ms. Siegel, who has dedicated her afternoons in making sure that we are prepared for all of our competitions. Moving on, this week is the most important week for MHS. It's Kindness Week, where we really focus on the spreading of kindness. Our leadership students have partnered up with our Link Crew students for lunchtime activities. Some of the activities include Take a Note, Leave a Note, where students can stick a kind note on the kindness tree, but they can also take a note. The notes will act as leaves on the tree. We also have the opportunity for students to write a note to someone in particular. A balloon plus that special note will be delivered to whoever they choose. On top of that, we are working with breaking down the walls. Yesterday, we had our first assembly and leader training. Students have been chosen by their teachers to be a student leader. Other students have been chosen to be the participants. Our teachers and staff are also have the opportunity to participate. Breaking down the walls is all about breaking down barriers between students. It's about getting out of your comfort zone. Student leaders are chosen, one, to set an example, and two, it's easier for students to listen to other students than adults. I have the opportunity in attending both the assembly and the leader training. I can truly say I think this program will have a big effect on our school. Closing up, I would like to make a vow. I would like to make a vow to my teachers, my peers, my school, my community, and others. As a student representative, my job is to represent my school, not just half or three-fourths of the school, but the whole school. I vow to set an example. I vow to stand up for what's right. I vow to use my voice for those who can't and those who won't. All I ask for you, board, is that you listen to your students in sincerity and with an open heart. Not only myself, but every student here. Because we are the ones who have to wake up and face daily issues and problems at school. Many complaints are from those who don't have to wake up and go to school every day and who have already graduated and are paying taxes. So when it comes to things like equity, equality, and fairness, listen to your students before listening to others. Thank you.
Then hurts.
Unfortunately, she is unexpectedly absent. I apologize.
Okay. Marysville Academy.
Good evening, board. To start off, for NCAA's school report, NCAA has a wide variety of clubs. Each has found their own way to contribute to an active environment. The AP Art Club is currently selling playing card decks, all designed by the art students. The Multicultural Club is organizing a club fair for late April or early May. The Excel Club plans to host a blood drive in February and a penny drive for the American Red Cross in March. As for the Debate Club, this community hosts a debate about once every 2 months. Every student is allowed to attend and observe. As for the Winter Ball, the junior class is currently organizing a Winter Ball. Due to COVID restrictions, the dance had been postponed until Saturday, March 5th, and this event will take place at the Edel Hall in Yuba City. For the Linnea Festival, this happened last weekend, students from the MCA Theater Tech and Advanced Drama classes were offered an opportunity to attend the Linnea Festival from February 4th to February 6th each year. This event was online due to COVID restrictions. Some upcoming drama productions include Junie B. Jones, which will take place in early March, and Freaky Friday the Musical in the end of April. That's all I have.
Thank you. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. But before we do that, I get in my head of myself all the time. We have recognitions. We have the FAA. Peter Farmer.
Is somebody from the high school recognizing? Oh, there you are.
Good evening, Board President Davis, Dr. Asrani, other members of the board, Ms. Tasalia, and Dr. Rico. It's wonderful to see you, and also members of the audience. My name is Chase Bisbee. I'm one of the agriculture teachers and FFA advisors at Marysville High School. Tonight, we have the opportunity, along with the three other wonderful ag teachers that I work with, to recognize just a fraction of the accomplishments of our over 300 members in our agriculture education program at Marysville High School. We do have a number of them to recognize. The other three ag teachers up, as well as the students, and we will recognize them one by one. As they make their way up here, I have the honor of congratulating, again, a few of our members who recently competed in what's called the Sierra Views FFA Section Project Competition Banquet. There's about 15 schools in our area, Each and every one of our students has what's called a supervised agricultural experience project. All students invest at a minimum of 100 hours at the graded component of the class in a project that's related to agriculture of their choosing. We have a few bright and talented students that actually competed with their project and brought home some plaques and ribbons and trophies and accolades as well. So please help me in congratulating three students who were recently awarded. First is Christian Cisneros, who won Division I of Work Experience. Two in Division I of Ownership Projects was Mr. Jarrett Lasaga. And third in this particular contest, who won Best Overall Project in the entire section, was Ms. Jade Lasaga.
Oh, Mr. Roltz is here. That's yours, yeah. That was yours.
Wonderful. My name is Donald Voltz. I teach the agriculture welding, agriculture mechanics at Marysville High School. I'm very fortunate to be able to get students really, really hands-on, both in my class and outside of my classroom. Some of the events that we take part in would be career development events in welding, career development events in the agriculture mechanics curriculum, and of course I coach the job interview contest where students put forth resumes, cover letters, fill out applications, and go through interview process with a board of judges. And so one of my students who is here is Jacob Havel. Jacob won second place at our section contest, and he to go on and compete at our region contest on February 18th. And we're very excited for him, and we're diligently practicing and getting his documents ready for that challenge. So, Jacob.
Group photo at the end, too. Good evening. My name is Kayla Coughlin, and I'm also one of the ag teachers, and I have a privilege of coaching a couple different teams, so I'm going to take a moment to recognize them. We're going to start off with extemporaneous speaking. Hands down, I believe this is the toughest contest in FFA, and so it's an absolute honor to introduce Seraphin and Faith Hallenkack, who both earned awesome awards. The first one, Tule Lake. We had Seraphin, who was fourth place. Faith was second or third place. And then they also competed at the section contest where Seraphin was third and Faith was second, and they are moving on to the regional contest next Friday. Okay. And you're going to pretend that you shook their hand twice, because they're also part of the veterinary science team, where they learn veterinary skills. They perform them in front of judges. They have to know tools. They have to know parasites, breeds, and a general knowledge test. It's a quite challenging contest. At Tule Lake, they were third overall, and out of 40 teams this last week at Arbuckle, they were fifth overall. A part of this team... Along with Seraphin and Faith, a part of this team is Elise Freeman and Haley Lermer. Go ahead, please, give them a hand. In prepared speaking, Jade Lasaga represents Marysville FSA at different competitions. So far, she has competed at Tule Lake, where she was first place, and at Sections, where she was second. She will be moving on to Sections. Moving on to Regions. Her speech is titled "Clean Meat." How clean is it? It's all about lab-grown meat. So if you have questions about lab-grown meat, ask that lady. She's pretty good. Please give her a round of applause. Gentlemen, I'm going to snag you side. I'm going to do the BIG girls next. Sorry. The BIG team, which is actually coached by a student teacher at Marysville High School, has members that include Deanna Good, Jennifer Reynoso, and Gabriella DeVeris. So far at Tule Lake, they placed second, and out of 40 teams, they were first place this last week in Arbuckle.
Okay. My name is Amanda Farishore, and I am one of the other teachers. I have the privilege of coaching the Impromptu team this year. The Impromptu contest is where the students get to choose a topic out of a hat, I guess, to say the least. And they have 1 minute to prepare themselves a speech of up to 2 minutes about any topic related to FFA, agriculture, leadership, or respond to a quote that is provided to them. This year, we had five gentlemen that worked really, really hard, practicing every day at lunch, sometimes after school, to prepare for these contests. We took four students to Tule Lake last month. At Tule Lake, Jarrett Lasaga placed second place, and Jesus Ochoa. And Jesus Ochoa placed fourth place. We then went on to the section contest, and Jesus Ochoa won the section contest, and he will be competing for Regions next Friday as well.
As we finish up today, we just want to say thank you. I know that in the business and the job and the work that you do, a lot of it gets caught up in the business of running the school, but what you do day in and day out at these board meetings and everything in between truly makes a positive difference in the lives of our young people. I would regret not also using this platform to thank some of the other wonderful people that help fund and help continue to do the wonderful work that we do. Those people include my wonderful boss, Ms. Siobhan Matthews. And also hiding in the back, who's probably going to get me for this later, is Miss Jamie Larson. And very finally, we want to extend an open and indefinite invitation for any of our administrators, any of our board members, of course, our superintendent, to come to any of our field days, any of our conferences, any of our conventions here in California and across the nation to see just the power of the organization that all these students are a part of. So thank you for your time tonight. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the work that you do.
Teachers at Lyndhurst High School. Our chapter is a little bit smaller. We're still growing in numbers. I do have one student to recognize here with us today. Her name is Erica Vargas. Kind of hard to follow up on Chase. He's a really great speaker. But she did compete in a Creed contest speaking. Placed fifth out of 120 students. Something to be proud of. She is going to UC Davis for her next contest. I teach ag mechanics, ag welding. I do have an ag mechanics team. Back in October, we took third place at Shasta College Field Day, and I had the third high individual as a freshman. So we're making some progress, and just want to give a round of applause to Erica.
I'll grab it. I'll share the photo with you. All right. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Davis and members of the board. This evening for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association, we basically kind of have two chunks to our comments to the board. One is a presentation on some historical budget info that we thought might be helpful, and then I will follow that up with some comments before we are done. So we basically have two sections. Our first section is going to be done in a presentation by Erica Schlesler, who is a member of our bargaining team and is also our grievance chair.
Which one was that here?
Oh, lights went down. I don't think you've ever done that for me before. Hi, I'm Erica Schlesler. I'm a kindergarten teacher. I'm on bargaining. And I'm the grievance chair for MUTA. And some of you have seen me come and do presentations before. It feels weird to be back, honestly. It's been years. So, but I hope that this information will help you in some of the decisions that you're going to be making. And it would really help if the slide went forward. Okay, first I wanted to say that how I see our district in the communication and decision-making is this triangle. And for a very long time, the communication between labor and the board has been difficult. We have these brief opportunities during your board meetings, but I think that if we had some better communication, it could work out a lot better. Communication can improve between admin and labor, but I think that we're doing pretty well there. And admin gets closed sessions with you and to discuss things that are about bargaining, things that aren't for the public domain. And the majority of what I have to say tonight, I would really prefer to talk with you about it in a closed session. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. Notice that the students are right there in the middle. And in my sense of humor, if you know me, you know me, that's a love triangle right there. And all of us are loving those students, caring for those students. But as with all love triangles, there's always somebody that's not getting the attention that we need. And in this case, it's labor. Now it went backwards. Okay, so over time, this shows how teachers' salaries as a percent of your total budget has changed. And I didn't have the exact number, but I know it was greater than 41% at the time that I was hired in 2005. And currently, it's down to 33% of your total budget. And it doesn't, I mean, if the budget gets bigger or smaller, whether you have a small household that you have a budget for or a large household, the percent that you spend on something indicates your priorities for that something. And in this case, it shows that we have dropped almost 10% in your eyes, or former board members' eyes, as a priority in this district. So I'm taking a look back at board presentations that have been given to some of you. If you were here in October of 2011, I have some actual slides from the presentation that was given to you, and I'd like to talk about how these presentations are given. This one is labeled Key Facts, and if you really look it over, it makes it seem like each of those things somehow relate to each other, but you do get to have the word limit, deficit, penalties, reduction, making it look bad. The presentations always make it look bad. And then I think that what's really important is what I have in red there. Note, carryover from 2010-11 is not included. So you have all these things that if you wanted to do a calculation that ended up somehow coming up with these numbers and this, you don't have enough information to do that. Hopefully you would ask. But when you do include the carryover from the previous year, the actual amount of revenue that you would have to work with as a board would be the $90 million, $10 million more than what was indicated on the slide. This slide shows the different components of the ending fund balance from the unaudited actuals. Those are the that's the report. The unaudited actual comes out after the school year is over, and it says what actually happened. And so for this unaudited actual, you see that the designated for economic uncertainties of 3%, a lot of times you see it referred to as the DEU. That's what's required to be there based on your budget for the year, and it's only $2.4 million. But at the end of that year, it was $11 million. And then if you look at those each individual pieces, it makes it sound like, oh, these things you couldn't touch, you know. You've got your revolving cash, stores, legally restricted balance, that DEU, other designations, and then undesignated. $5.9 million undesignated. The kids from that year, it was designated. It was designated by the taxpayers to be spent on the kids that year. 12 years ago, those kids are out of the schools now, and this money's still hanging there and has gotten larger. Undesignated. Now, this slide showed the different types of reports that you get. You get the adopted budget early in the year. Then you get the first interim, the second interim, the third interim, and then the unaudited actuals. And I'm not really sure what their point was by sharing this particular piece of information, because what it shows is how inaccurate their projections were. Now, I understand that it's going to be inaccurate. You do a budget, and you don't really know how much is coming in. You don't really know in the end how much is exactly going out. So it's going to be some inaccuracy. By the end, the adopted budget thought that the decrease in the general fund was going to be about $4 million. By the first interim, they were down to about $1 million. just a little less than $1 million in the second term. Almost 14,000 down by the third interim. And the third interim is a report that you're given in May. So there's 1 month of school left in the year. And to me, by the third interim, when you've got 1 month left, you should know how much money you're going to have left over. What ended up actually happening is that the general fund increased by $1.6 million. All of these projections were wrong. The budget one was incredibly wrong. All of them said that you were going to be decreasing your fund budget, and in actuality, you didn't. I believe that smoke and mirrors is something that is used to try and tell the community and to tell your labor groups, we just can't afford. Look at this. We're deficit spending. These are the third interims, and it says budget savings. Past unrestricted budget savings. All of these are third interims over the years from 2005 to 2011. And what it shows is that the third interim predicted that you'd be down this much. By the actual, you were actually up this much. You were off by $1.8 million. The third interim, you were off by $816 in 2006-07 from what the actuals were. 2007-08, third interim. Remember, that's that May report where people should know what the end is going to be. The third interim said it was going to be down 800,000. It was actually down 232, a difference of 603. 2008-09, it was really close. You were only $88,000 off. And then 2009-10, you were off by nearly $2 million. And 10-11, $415,000. I think it's sad that the third interim would be off by so much. A lot of times, however, we are still bargaining at the time that that third interim comes out, and it's pretty convenient to say, well, look, we're going to be losing money. I don't even know why you show multi-year projections. I don't think that they could be accurate. But I do want to show the trend in this district is to always have the absolute worst-case scenario that over the multi-year trends, they always have to, it's a requirement by law, you have to do them. I'm not sure why you even look at them after you've put them on paper. Because the ending fund balance in 2011-12, at the time of this report, they expected it to be $8 million left over. In 12-13, $5 million. In 13-14, just about $2 million. In actuality, that's what happened those 3 years. That's how bad those multi-year projections are. And they've always been bad. This one's not nearly as bad as the one that happened. I don't know if you guys remember Mark Allgaier, but he had one that was like $40 million off. So here's the ending fund balance trend from 2009 until 2021. That red block, the reason I have it highlighted is because that year is the year that that report I just showed you was about. And they had been predicting, talking about deficit spending, oh my goodness, we're going down. Every year, every one of these years, we were told deficit spending. And you've gone from $9.4 million in 2009 to $63 million last year, leftover money. imagining $11 million is kind of a hard thing to do. So I'm going to relate it to time because I think we can understand time a little bit better. And let's say that you have a job that pays you a dollar a minute. 1 hour, you'd get $60. So a 3 hour and 20 minute board meeting would be $200. If you guys could keep it to 320, it'd be just what you get paid. An 8 hour day would be 480. 5 days a week, or 5 days would be 2,400. 1 year, going by a 52 week year, would be 124,800. Not bad. If you worked that job $1 a minute for 8 years, that would be $1 million. But you don't have just $1 million left over. The DEU would cost 24 years. But that's not $1 million. That $9 million left over all the way on the left side of the graph there is 72 years. That'd take us back to 1950. Some people call those the good old days. I disagree. That $11 million from that year that I was talking about would take us back to 1934, which is right before my dad was born. The $31 million that was an ending fund balance one time would be 1773. I imagine going back there and telling Benjamin all about what shooting in schools is like, and maybe something would be different in the Constitution. $63 million. That's what you have left over from last year right now, besides whatever revenue you've gotten this year. 504 years, taking you to 1518. It's when the Spanish conquered the Aztec Empire. It's when Martin Luther was excommunicated for questioning the Catholic Church and started Protestant churches all over. Meanwhile, the teacher's salary over this time, from 15 to 1920, has remained below average for all other districts and unified districts in this state. The balance on this increased 600% over that time. I was told that, oh my gosh, the district is suffering because it's having to pay so much more in benefits. However, if you notice along that line there, it has remained at exactly $9,084 a year per teacher because they haven't increased, or you haven't increased our cap during that whole time. Here's what we pay. In 2009, it was costing $13,836 per year for health care. Now, I want to just say that everybody has different plans they can pick, such as I take one of the lower plans, the Plan 8. My husband had two hip surgeries. I was in a car accident and got in the hospital. It big year, but regardless of the plan, you either pay it in premiums or you pay it in your deductible and your co-pays and all of that. So I'm just calling it health care rather than insurance. So that has gone up to $28,872 a year. That's the amount that is paid to any board member who is receiving health benefits from the district for serving. You probably didn't know you were making $28,872, but you are. This red bar is how much is left over when you take this bar out of a first-year teacher's salary. They start at about $54,000. You take out $28,872, and this is what you got left. And then taxes are taken out, workers' comp, STIRS. So the teacher contribution has increased by $15,000 a year. It's a 108% increase. The district's contribution has remained the same. And new teacher's insurance is more than half of their gross pay. Meanwhile, this is what's happening with the district. Do you know that if you did a one-time off-balance, off-schedule pay increase of 100%, you would still have $40 million left. So during that same time, the district's balance increased 600%. And this is what's happening to your employees. The cost of housing is going up, whether you're renting or buying. The cost of food is going up. The price of health care is going up. The consumer price index, gas prices, electric prices, everything is going up so much more than it is for you. Not you personally, you the district. You're not out there trying to find a studio apartment for less than $2,000, but my son is. Hard worker, full-time job, he can't afford a studio apartment. And you have a teacher shortage all over the entire country. But you have $63 million sitting in the bank that could do something to attract those teachers. So we could have quality teachers to choose from, not just warm bodies. So here's what you can do. First, remember that retention is greater than hiring as far as the impact on the district. If you can manage to retain those of us who are here and stop us from quitting and retiring, that works the best. Train admin to be more supportive. A lot of the admin haven't had that much time in classrooms, and a lot of the admin are getting pressure themselves to do things that they don't necessarily want to do, but we need to have them be supportive, especially in evaluation. The purpose of evaluation is not to find what somebody's doing wrong. It's to find ways to help them be better. Stop saying self-care while you're adding additional work to us. Don't waste our time by getting input that's going to be ignored. We do not need to go to another meeting, even if it's on Zoom and I can do it from my bed. I don't need to be participating in something where my input's going to be ignored. Use teacher expertise to guide policy. We see how things impact children. We're there with them every day. We have expertise in how things can happen. Tell us what you want to happen and let us help you do it. Cover the cost of the bronze plan. That's what you get with Covered California, bare minimum bronze plan. If you covered that cost, I would drop over. But that would be incredible. And don't make us beg for COLA. You know that guy that came here and talked with you, did his whole presentation, and he was talking about how because of the STIRS thing, and we don't know if the governor's going to buy that down, so the cost is still going to go up, and so the COLA is being eaten by that, and it's going to be only 2%. You have $63 million. You can do a one-time buy down on that. Sorry. So just kind of go back to that bronze plan. Connect the health care cap to the cost of the bronze plan. So whatever the bronze plan is, That would be the district contribution. And then if anybody wants something better than the bronze plan, they can pay for that. Whoa, that went backwards fast. Grace disappeared. Okay. So grace. Don't require extra. Not every teacher right now needs to be evaluated. Staff meetings don't have to be an hour long. Find the good. On that evaluation thing, your principals know their teachers. And if there's somebody they're not real sure on, and so they would need to do an evaluation because this might, they're probationary, they'll do that evaluation. But some old person like me that's been getting really good evaluations my entire time and doing a great job, I don't need to be observed, and she doesn't need that paperwork. Sorry, got personal. Let me go to the next one. Wow, now I'm going backwards again. Sorry. Here we go. Administrators need to be able to question the superintendent without fear. I don't know if you know this, Superintendent Osrani, but I see it. There are administrators who are afraid to question, to say, wait, that might not work, because they're afraid of you. And you don't want that. You don't want yes people. You want people to point out what the problem might be so you can fix it before it happens. Please be mindful of that. So here's my groundbreaking concept, truly working as a team. Let's have board closed session meetings with MUTA, and you can do it with other labor groups, to discuss bargaining topics. You should have all the information that you need when you're making decisions, and you're not getting all of it. If you have questions, you can contact me at this phone number, 530-301-0306. And yes, I know that went out to the internet. Hello, guys. I don't care. Everybody has my phone number. You can text me. Let me know if you want to call me. We'll make a time. My district email is ischlesler@mjusd.com, and my personal is ischlesler5@gmail.com. And that's the end of my presentation, but if anybody has any questions right now, you can let me know. I did make a recording of this information, and I will email it out to board members. Thank you.
So hopefully the board has some idea, some concept of what we're trying to get across to the board, along the lines of the finances and the budget. Moving along from that, I did tell the board that we would have a second portion to our comments, and I will try to keep those short and sweet to the point, since our presentation was a little longer. I don't think it will come to a surprise to anybody on the board, nor anybody else who has heard the union speak, nor heard me speak, but the informational item that comes further down in the agenda on the equity policy, I will tell you, was disheartening at best. When the agenda came out on Thursday and I saw that the equity policy was back on the agenda, I was not surprised. In December, it was tabled for 2 months. I have heard pretty much crickets since then in regards to it. There were comments made about how every school site council was going to be able to have input into that before it was revised and brought to the board. I will tell you patently, with every fiber of my being, I can tell you that's 100% not true. Between the December meeting and this meeting, you had sites that didn't even have school site council meetings. You also have school sites in this district that you have people in the community as well as people on those staffs that can't even tell you who is on their school site council nor when they meet. And so I'm not sure that was a great avenue to begin with, but it wasn't even utilized to what it said it was going to be. On top of that, there's mention in the agenda that there was student input. I've asked about 50 students if they knew anything about the input, not getting real into a whole equity policy, but just asked them if they knew from three different sites. Not a clue. And so I will tell you that the revised policy that has come forward is insulting and degrading. The fact that the board or the district believes that your teachers, your professional educators, are so clueless that they would not catch this is absolutely insulting. The fact that you thought your own community was also that clueless is degrading and insulting as well. And speaking as somebody who was born and raised here and somebody who still lives here, I can speak to that with all certainty. Also, as far as your equity policy is concerned, I think it's interesting that when I sat down over the weekend to try to come up with comments, because you'll notice I'm not reading from anything tonight, I couldn't for the life of me draft comments to come to the board tonight. I tried over and over and over again. I don't know how many times I started and stopped comments to the board and finally gave up on Sunday night. And then yesterday was down at the union office and came across comments that I made to the board almost exactly 2 years ago to the day about an incident on a campus in this district that absolutely was repulsive and disgusting. And I will tell you that those comments ring just as true tonight as they did 2 years ago. You have 10,000 students and 1,000 educators in this district who are begging and pleading with you to do the right thing and to pass an equity policy that is beneficial to our students, to our teachers, to our programs. I don't think it's too much to ask that we actually do that. Because the policy that you're trying to have information on in here tonight is stripped of equity. It's the most non-equity equity policy I've ever seen in my life. If you compare and contrast, you will see that there is very little, if anything, substantial left from the original equity policy. And so the comments that I made 2 years ago, you won't be surprised that you've heard me quote a lot of historical figures in the past, including last meeting when I quoted Wilma Mankiller to start off with. But I quoted Medgar Evers at length in my comments 2 years ago. Those of you that know me will remember, I taught history and English. Medgar Evers is somebody that I have admired for years now. He is a hero to me. And Medgar Evers made comments 60 years ago that still ring true here. He said that history has reached a turning point. That's it. That's where we are. History has reached a turning point. We had that turning point 2 years ago with an incident at a campus. We had that history a year and a half ago with an incident at our own campus, Marysville High School, where one of the young ladies that was involved in that is actually here this evening, hoping and praying that even though she graduated, that you guys will do what's right for her family members and her siblings and cousins that still attend here. And just this year, we had another incident at Marysville High School that proves without a shadow of a doubt that we need an equity policy with teeth that will protect our students and our teachers and our schools and our communities. I'm asking you, the board, to be the allies and the advocates for these students that they need and that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association, Numbers 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Now we're going to move into our presentations, Kynock Elementary.
Good Members, Madam Superintendent, members of the Cabinet, and members of the audience. This is awesome seeing so many people turn out to see a presentation from Kynoch and Johnson Park. You do have a rough night ahead of you with some big decisions, but I can't tell you how my heart was filled seeing the celebrations and the recognitions of the students and all that's going on. And if you come and visit Kynoch campus, you will see that that is the evidence that we aim for and try to attain every single day. You've seen these board presentations and trying to go through these so they're not boring and stale. That's what we're going to try to do tonight. My name is Derek Morrison. I am the principal of Kynoch Elementary. This is my assistant principal.
My name is Jordan Hall.
And we would love to share about Kynoch School tonight. And sorry for the transitions. It didn't work like this on my end on our computer, but we'll get it figured out. I'd like to read an excerpt from a story called Kids Deserve It, because we can read to you these slides, but this is really what we're about. Kids deserve an excited adult. They need someone who's ready to explore and laugh with them all day. Someone who's looking for those magic moments, full of high fives coming down the line with energy radiating all around. Our kids have far more issues to deal with at home than many of us realize. School for them, they come to every day, they need to be ready to surround them with love, encouragement, and hope. We challenge our teachers to leave the problems in the car, and that's for me too. Leave your problems in your car, take a deep breath, and focus on the positive. Find hope. Kids need the best you. Step out and be your best every single day and be awesome. And Mr. Rasmussen, thank you for recognizing the efforts of the teachers that they do every day. I know that you guys feel that way. Teachers are tired right now. Administrators, everybody that's involved in education is tired. But we do it because the kids deserve it. Jordan will take over the next slide for us.
Our site plan is driven by multiple factors, including but not limited to closing the educational and achievement gaps that are most prevalent among our students, which are students with disabilities, low-income students, minority students, and English language learners. We constantly seek the input of our educational partners to help us plan our programs that will help meet the needs of all of our students. Realizing that we are much stronger together, we have started the practice of gathering input from our educational partners. One of the tools that we're currently using is we send out online surveys different times throughout the year. So just got the feedback from trimester two, and we'll be sending out trimester three at the end of the school year. Our data is gathering and using a variety of assessment tools, including our state standardized testing, cognitive formative assessments that are done by grade level, and as well as input from our stakeholders and students.
In our site plan, we have four goals, and they are basically driven by student achievement. The four goals are focused on improving student achievement for all learners that cover a wide range of resources. Some examples are additional personnel from goal number one. We have hired some paras just recently in the last week to make a team of four paras that can serve our students and help our teachers provide interventions when it's just really tough to help the needs of the students that they have. And number two is providing a three-week summer bridge for targeted groups of students. And actually, the principal that took over for the summer is Ms. Baker, and she's here in attendance tonight. In goal number one, Kynoch has focused its resources on providing the highest quality first-time instruction for our students. We have attempted to put tools in the hands of our teachers and staff that will assist in making learning fun and engaging. And Stacy Anthony, actually it was Mrs. Baker who said, when I was hired as the assistant principal, the thing that feared her the most was in the interview I said, she asked what will you want to see when you come into a classroom? And I said, I want to see fun. I want to see kids having fun. I want to see teachers having fun. We're getting back into the swing of that. The last 2 years were hard, but if you come onto our campus, you will see, I hope you will see, and sense joy for being there. The social-emotional learning of our kiddos is top ranked right now. Some examples from goal number one, our celebrations and our focus areas. Miss Latuka is standing there next to two of our book vending machines that we purchased for our Read, Read, Read program, and they have created excitement about reading on our campus. By the end of the 22 school year, down there in the bottom, every classroom at Kynoch will have a new laser projector. And if you've been on Kynoch's campus, you see that a lot of our classrooms are full of windows and glass, and with the older projectors, they dim out and you cannot see. So we've invested in having these new laser projectors installed and put into our classrooms to help the teachers do their job. And then up there in the top right corner is a picture of one of our teachers working with small groups, and that's where the meat of it all is working with those kids to make that connection with the students and help them in their areas of need.
Our second goal all comes down to culture. Like Mr. Morrison has said multiple times, we like to have fun at Kynoch. If you ever have the privilege of meeting us on campus, there's a good chance that Mr. Morrison will be in a Batman suit. We like to have a good time with the kids, and so we focus a lot of our time and energy on the social and emotional learning of our students. Probably one of our biggest pushes with that is we fund a full-time elementary student support specialist, Ms. Billy, who does a lot of work with our students who need the most help with that SEL stuff. And she's fantastic. We celebrate. That's what we do. We work so hard to accomplish so much, and we want our staff and students to know how much we appreciate them. So every Wednesday, we do what we call Kynoch Community. We do a little flagpole ceremony, say the pledge, and then we start getting kids up there, recognizing them, giving out awards. It's a great time. Hope you swing by one of these days. Actually, one of our teachers just finished her master's degree, and her graduation ceremony was canceled due to the lockdown and all that good stuff. So we had our own for her. That's what we do at Kynoch. We like to have a good time. Our PBIS team is working constantly to create a system that works for us, that continues to reward and teach good behaviors that we want to see from our students.
Fortunately, that teacher graduated from Brandman, the same school I graduated from, so we had all the stuff already ready to go. goal number three, again, building on the culture, it's increasing the engagement with the new phrase, I guess, is educational partners. So our community involvement is a big key. We want to get Kynoch Community to be that place where my wife attended there, my sister-in-law's attended there, my mother-in-law was the secretary there for years. I've lived down the street from this school for 26 years. I was hired in Yuba City and never thought that I would be working at Kynoch. And then the door opened, and now I am, I believe, where I need to be, working with these families and with this community. And I love my job. And being able to see this group come together, that's a picture of our breakfast with Santa, where our ORC reached out to the Kiwanis, and they've adjusted and done a drive-through breakfast with Santa instead of packing out our cafeteria during the COVID times. So being flexible and trying to find ways to still stay attached and connected to our community. Some of our celebrations with this, we had our Read Across America Day, even amidst COVID, and that is our own mayor from Marysville, and actually Kynoch alumni, Chris Branscombe. He was one of our guest readers. And then, as Mr. Holmes talked about, we have our surveys that go out that drive what we do, and it started a new paw print to keep families, a monthly paw print that is part of the Gold Gazette, that you can find out what's going on at Kynoch as well.
And our fourth goal summer learning opportunities. So our extended learning opportunities last year, we did a 3-week intensive summer bridge program where we focused on literacy skills. We had a little over 150 students who took part in that. Not only did we do that, every other school in the district did that, we also set aside money so we can make sure to have a PE teacher and an art teacher there so the kids could have some fun in addition to their intensive learning. They had a great time, everybody who was a part of it. Like Mr. Morrison said, Ms. Baker did a fantastic job running the show. Oh, that was supposed to be what I talked about. I apologize. And for next year, we plan on doing the Summer Institute again this year, and we want to grow it. We want it bigger and better.
If you haven't caught on, that guy's a football coach by trade. This is the budget that was allocated for us, and as you see, that's a pretty large amount of money, and we're operating with a budget of $580,713, close to two-thirds of our budget. It's utilized in Title I funds, with the remaining balance being utilized in targeted allocations. What we try to do is to do our best to be wise stewards of the allocations that are given to us and are reminded by the 700-plus students on campus that they deserve our best every day. And as Mr. Holmes said, if you come and visit Kynoch, you might catch me in a Batman costume or a chicken suit, as Dr. Fall did when she visited us, but you are always welcome to come and see the great things that are happening at Kynoch School. We thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, we would be glad to answer them for you. Thank you.
Go Cubs.
I would just like to thank you, Mr. Morrison and Mr. Holmes, for all that you do and your presentation tonight. Thank you very much.
Johnson Park.
I haven't started yet. Don't start my timer. Okay. All right. Good evening, Board, Board President, Dr. Asrani, Dr. Greco, and Ms. Basalia, and members of the audience and our community out there watching. My name is Tracy Pomeroy. I am the proud principal of Johnson Park Elementary School, home of the Superjets, where we are soaring to success. And today, tonight, I have an amazing group of individuals. If I could have you stand up. Got some over here, some over here. Yes. Very honored to work with these dedicated educators. They're amazing. So proud to be a part of this team. We are so excited to share our school with you. We have a lot of great things going on at Johnson Park. So, All right. Our mission is we, the staff of Johnson Park, will work to the best of our ability to help each child reach his or her educational and individual potential. We will encourage parents to become involved in their child's education through home and school cooperation. We strive to provide a positive and supportive learning environment. And like Kynoch, we like to have fun, as you can see. We've got teachers dressed in costumes welcoming students as they come to school. And that wasn't even the first day of school. That's
just us. And so we're also a PBIS school where our expectations are super jets, are respectful, responsible, and safe. Okay. All right. Glad it's not doing what it's doing in front of me. It's bouncing back and forth. Okay. The purpose of our school plan, our school plan for student achievement, is to ensure that all children have an opportunity to receive a fair and equitable and highly quality education, and we work to close educational achievement gaps. Our SIPSA is developed through collaboration with our stakeholders in the planning stage and the implementation of the SIPSA. The goals in our SIPSA are also aligned with the district goals in the LCAP. For the planning stage of our SIPSA, we seek the input from our stakeholders in the comprehensive need assessments, including Title I surveys, EL surveys with our ELAC group, staff and student surveys that impact staffing decisions, professional development, family engagement, program funding, and other programs and services at our site. Here are our data metrics. So in addition to the California School Dashboard, we look at enrollment data, LPAC data, common formative assessments, our Renaissance Star data for math and ELA, accelerated reader data, and our family engagement feedback. We have four goals in our SIPSA. The first is to provide academic performance through staff involvement in the collaborative PLC process and to ensure appropriate support systems are in place to meet the academic needs of all of our students. Goal two is to provide a positive, safe, and healthy supportive learning environment for all of our students and staff, and as we continue to implement our PBIS expectations. And then goal three is to increase parent and family and community involvement and school-to-home communication. And goal four is to provide designated ELD instruction to all of our English learners. So here are the strategies for goal one and two. We have our paraeducators supporting in our classrooms and in small group interventions. We have our collaborations with our PLCs. We have our JET time, which is our RTI intervention time. We have our literacy resource technician, who has been instrumental in implementing our new accelerated reader program this year. Goal two strategies, which are our conditions and climate. We have our implementation of our multi-tiered systems of support and social-emotional learning in the classrooms, as well as our new counselor. Shout out to our counselors. It is School Counseling Week. Ms. Zahoda. And our PBIS and our outreach consultant, and we have a student support specialist position and all of those other lovely things you see listed there. Pictured here are some of our goal one strategies in action. We have our wonderful para, Ms. Durr, who's working with a student. We have some of our grade level teams working in their PLCs, and our amazing Ms. Abby, who is our LRT, pictured there with some students in the library. Here we have some goal two strategies in action. Our PBIS, a monthly lunch with the principal, Friday game room with our ORC, Ms. Kachu, who's right here. And over there in the right corner, we have Ms. Zahoda working with a student. We also have our PBIS store that we have on Fridays. Lots of fun. We also have Sammy Circuit, who provides physical fitness with SEL lessons, as well as some fun monthly virtual family nights. And then we have some more. We're really heavy with goal two. We like I said, we like to celebrate and have some fun. So here we have our reclassification for our EL students. We had 7 students that reclassified this year. And also at one of our Friday flag ceremonies, we are awarding our accelerated readers. We have those every Friday. Okay, more of Goal 2 strategies showing off here. We have Dance Party Fridays, so if you like to dance, come on over on Fridays. We have music playing on the playground. Kids love it. Mondays, we have Miss Kachu, who is conducting Monday Mindful Mondays, where she has yoga sessions, and it's also part of our restorative practices. And at the bottom of the screen, we have some pictures from last week's Great Kindness Week, where students were involved in dress-up days, and they created a kindness tree with kind notes and had a lot of fun with that. But every day is Kindness Day at Johnson Park. Okay, so here are some strategies and goals for goals 3 and 4. For goal 3, we have our school site council. We have our ELAC, Pack to School Night, monthly newsletters, fall festival, and all of the other activities you see listed here. For goal 4, we provide 30 minutes of designated ELD instruction daily, as well as integrated instruction throughout the day. We are grateful for our EL facilitator, who's at the bottom right corner there with a student. She's amazing. Miss Martina. Okay, here we have a Veterans Day celebration where we worked with Lyndhurst High School's Junior ROTC. They were in attendance. They did an amazing job. We were able to also invite one of their band members who played taps. It was absolutely beautiful. We were able to honor family members as well as our very own Miss Stabnaugh. She's our veteran. And so it was just a great day. It was really a beautiful day. And the Junior ROTC happened to be having their inspection review that day, and they did an amazing job. So it was an awesome day. In addition to building those relationships with our community members, we've had opportunities to invite the Yuba County Sheriff's Department and Linda Fire Department to our school. We've had some canine demonstrations as well as them coming along, the Sheriff's Department coming to help us out with our fall festival. We even have Freddie Mercury there. And then here's some pictures of our fall festival, which was a lot of fun for the kids and staff. I wanted to throw in that we love PE music. It's very important, so we're very, very grateful for that. So here is our total budget. We are a smaller school of 400, not 700, but this is our Title I and our targeted funds, including our Title I parent involvement. All right, so this concludes my presentation. I thank you again for this opportunity to share our school with you. I thank my staff for being here. And you have an open invitation anytime to swing by and have some fun with us, if I'm willing to answer any questions that you may have.
Again, Mrs. Pomeroy, I would like to thank you and all your staff for coming tonight. And I know tomorrow is going to be an early day. And again, thank you all that you do for the kids in our neighborhood there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. And thank you, yes. Thank you so much for being here.
Now we'll move to the superintendent, or the update of the from the superintendent, business services.
Good evening. The update from the business services department, we're just all trying to survive this latest surge of COVID and mitigate the staffing shortages and just hanging in there. So thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Education services.
Okay, and I'm going to combine just education services and personnel. So educational services is just concluding the first set of uploads for FPM. So we're through the first wave, going through the commenting section now. So thank you again to Jamie Larson for all of the hard work with the team there and getting that up to date and good to go. Beyond that, LCAP, you'll see the midterm reports on some of the metrics coming forward at the next board meeting. So we'll have the annual update for the board on the LCAP at our next meeting. From the personnel services side of thing, we've continued to work hard to hire and try to fill all of the gaps that we have when it comes to staffing. Again, our staff has been Herculean in their efforts to keep things running here for the district. But at this point, we have continued to hire. We have on board tonight a new principal for MCAA from a mid-year retirement we had. And would you like the introduction now, or do you want us? We'll wait on that. Okay. And then the second piece is we have a new adult education principal that was hired as well. We were also able to bring two new teachers on this last month on top of that. We have upcoming bargaining dates with MUTA and CSEA in February that we're looking forward to. And I think that's it for the update this evening.
Thank you. Dr. Srani.
I'd like to pass my time over to Jamie Larson. She has done a phenomenal job with the foster youth and the homeless youth and wants to talk about that. But before Jamie walks up, walk a little slowly, Jamie. I just want to give a big shout out and thank you to everybody for a job well done, for keeping the district functioning so effectively. And again, during this time of adversity and stretches and personal and social and emotional lives, just keep a smile on your face and let's just work together. Thank you. Jamie.
Good evening. Thank you, Dr. Asrani, for giving me just a couple of minutes. But I just wanted to come and share with you our thank you to the folks that really helped us make our HOPE, our homeless outreach program, the holiday super special for more than 150 homeless students. So even though we sent a thank you right to the sponsors after the holidays, we just wanted to reach out again here in February, Heart Month, and I learned today that Kindness Week is either here or right around the corner, and what a perfect opportunity to reach back out to all of the donors and our collaborators that help make this possible. We have worked for a few years now, quite a few years, with the Yuba Center Agents of Change and Yuba County employees who come together. They adopted 112 of our families, matching wish lists that students are submitting. We also had the remainder of those 150 picked up from sponsors that we have listed here. You'll note that our HOPE sponsors that we have, or our HOPE supporters that we have here in this box, they're all retired employees, so they're still staying connected to our district through supporting our homeless children during the holidays. We have 5 employees that also adopted kids this year. So you can, we've talked about the Yuba County folks, probation, that come together. This year, we really focused on food boxes. We do a random acts of kindness program that we've talked to you about where we do on select Fridays bags full of food for our homeless students. During the holidays, we went for big boxes so that they had some food to sustain them when school was not in session. This year, the food bank partnered with us, didn't charge us at all for the food that they contributed. And then we had this huge outpouring of community support for that. So not only did it fund the food boxes for the holidays, but it will continue to fund our random acts of kindness bags that we will do throughout the remainder of this year. We had some realtors that a year ago reached out, did shoes for us. Well, this year at Christmas, they came back and did pajamas. So we had over 300 pairs of pajamas that were donated. Companies that are doing blankets. We have another retiree from the district that knitted hats for all of our students. We had some generous just cash donations that came in through our Education Foundation, earmarked specifically for our HOPE program and those students. So I thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity. We'll follow up once again with all of the donors and just letting them know that we have shared their support with you. You have acknowledged that, and we'll also send them a little box of candy hearts to show our appreciation. So thank you for giving me a few minutes.
Thank you very much. Now we have the approval of minutes, the minutes from the regular board meeting of January 25th, 2022. Are there any corrections to the minutes? If not, do I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Frank Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Randy Rasmussen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we move to the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that members of the board would like to have pulled? If not, do I hear a motion?
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Boone. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now before we move into new business, Dr. Ashrani.
Thank you, President Davis. Wanted to take this opportunity to invite up two excellent administrators that are stepping into, one of them coming to our district. We're so honored. And the other one stepping into a very new and exciting role for the district. May I please have Mr. Bob Eckert come up and just say a few words? He is appointed tonight as the new principal of the district's adult school.
Good evening, board. Thank you, Dr. Ashrani. I want to first thank Dr. Ashrani for her vision in bringing adult education back, and the board for their decision to allow me this privilege. It's been an honor to serve at Lyndhurst for 17 years. It has been a privilege, and I am so, so excited to jump into this role with adult education. This is an opportunity to have a transformative impact within our community, build relationships, and really grow our area. So thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Mr. James Lohman, we have the honor. He is now appointed as a new principal of MCAA.
Thank you very much, and good evening, board and everyone. First, I can't even begin to express how thrilled I am. As an educator with experience over the last couple of decades in teaching, in curriculum instruction, technology integration, career and technical education, and most importantly, the performing arts, music, and theater, this is a culmination of everything I've ever wanted to do. And I really thank you most sincerely. I'm very excited to be working with the students and the staff, the community, and the teachers at Marysville Charter Academy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. New business. Approval of the Foothills Intermediate School renovation and upgrade project using ESSER Title III funds. Mr. Dixon.
PowerPoint. Well, thank you, President Davis, board members, Dr. Ashrani, Cabinet. I'm back again. I was here in August presenting to the board on this same subject. There are some updates that I would like to present tonight, and then there's a recommendation at the end as well. Let's see if I can get this thing to function. So it was back in August when I visited the school site with staff, and some of the observations was a curb appeal, or lack thereof. There is a big septic system. There's a dirt lot adjacent to the school. The field looked really good. The field space up above Foothill that was improved recently looks really good. And there was an elevation change on the property as well, which could impact ADA access compliance. There is a Yuba County facility right next door as well. We did find, Jennifer did find, a soils report at the last board meeting. We talked about naturally occurring asbestos perhaps being on the site. The soils report indicated there is not naturally occurring asbestos. That's great news. Some of the things about the school, and maybe I should back up a little bit. I worked in two districts as an employee, Capistrano Unified, and in Capistrano, we built 31 new schools in 24 years. It was growing like crazy. And then I went to Santa Ana as the assistant superintendent, and we did all our work on our 61 sites that were all existing sites, no new schools. So I've been doing this for a while. I retired in 2015. I was just coming off being chair of the Coalition for Adequate School Housing, CASH, and I was also the chair of the Prop 51 state bond campaign. So I've been doing this for a while. So my observations, and I think you would agree, the administration office just doesn't seem to be functional. It's really small at the school. Social distancing, which is a big part of what the ESSER funds, and ESSER, by the way, is the Elementary and Secondary Emergency Relief Fund, ESSER. And there were three of them, actually. There was the CARES Act in 2020, in March of 2020, right when the pandemic hit. Then in December of 2020, there was CARES Act 2, or ESSER 2. And then in March of 2021 was the American Rescue Act, American Rescue Plan. So we call those, for the sake of argument, ESSER 1, ESSER 2, and ESSER 3. So getting back to the school, demountable walls. There was a lot of schools built in the 60s and 70s that had this open school concept where you could take the walls and there were rails on the ceiling and you could lock it to the floor and you could make different classroom configurations. Over the years, in Foothill, those are affixed. They're not moving, not going anywhere. And what it did, it created a situation that it currently doesn't meet fire egress code. Fire egress code requires a corridor, a separated fire corridor from every classroom to get outside, or a door directly to the outside from that classroom. What's happened at Foothill? And it's not that uncommon. During class size reduction days, 10 years ago, no longer than that, 20 years ago, a lot of schools, this kind of situation happened. But it does need to get fixed. The kitchen and multipurpose rooms seem functional. They're large enough. I didn't do a plumbing code count on the number of fixtures, but just by eyeball and talking to the staff and principal, it seems as if we're lacking restroom facilities at Foothill. There was some other maintenance problems that I noticed. The ceiling tiles had stains, which would indicate a leak, a roof leak typically. One of the things that the staff brought up is when the power goes off, the emergency lighting doesn't work, doesn't come on. I think that perhaps has been fixed by now. The vinyl composition tile in the multipurpose room does need to be replaced. And natural lighting is a big component of student achievement. There's been a lot of studies done on that, and Foothill does not have very much, hardly at all, natural lighting in the facility. So some of the things we've been talking about it for a while, with Dr. Asrani on board, we've been talking about it a lot recently. These initial findings and the recommendations that I came up with. And they are just recommendations, obviously. Everything's been verified. I looked at the as-built, the architectural plans. And again, we researched the asbestos issue. No action required. So my idea, and again, you'll have to get an architect involved and go through some process with your facilities committees. But to put the fire-rated corridors in the main building, and the superstructure of the main building at Foothill appears to be fine. And by looking at the architectural plans and talking to the architect and others, it seems to be in good shape. We just need to gut the inside and put in a fire-rated corridor and set up the classrooms correctly. That'll take a lot of space that you're currently using for classrooms. So the idea would be to put a new building in the front of the school. It'd take care of many things. You need more space, first of all. But you could also dress it up and make a nice curb appeal. So when you drive by Foothill, you have a new building, you fix the landscape, you fix the parking lot. You have a nice-looking entrance to the school. So what would it cost? Well, this was August, and with escalation and construction, it's getting scary. But at $600 a square foot, a 6,000 square foot building, which should be able to house all those new facilities that I mentioned, be about $3.6 million. A good number that we've been using in the business for last year or so for modernization is $200 a square foot. Site work, estimating $400,000, and then a 25% contingency in for soft costs. So that's a $11,250,000 project. Again, you're going to go through your processes, hire your architect, take a look at some other ideas, I suppose, would be important to do. But the ESSER funds came to school districts as one-time money, right? One-time money. What's the rule of one-time money? Reduce future costs, provide long-term benefit. Hopefully both. But that's the intent of one-time money. The state school facility program doesn't have any money right now. There's two bills going through the state right now, AB 75. Assemblymember O'Donnell's bill is a $9 billion state school facility program. And on the Senate side, SB 22 is a much larger bond, but it would also be for UC and CSU schools. So both of those are going through to provide more money into the state school facility program. And you do have eligibility at that site, and I think we have a better number than the 1.5. I think it's up a little bit from there. So I'd encourage you to at least apply for that. Now, the governor's budget in January, he proposes there's $1.4 billion in authority remaining, and Prop 51 proposes to sell that, and also about $240 million more into the school facility program is in his budget. We'll see what happens with the May revise and what the final budget looks like, but it's not enough. There's about $2.5 billion in projects beyond Prop 51 authority waiting right now. So it would take a significant amount of money to put back into the state school facility program. So we can forget number one. I've said that a couple of times. It was interesting. So Jennifer and I had a talk with the leadership of the Office of Public School Construction, and there's some water issues at Foothill as well. And they indicated, the executive director of OPSC indicated that that could actually be a facility hardship project where we could do some filtration of the water. What that means is two things, matching funds of whatever the cost would be, and also you move to the top of the line with facility hardship. You have all these districts and projects lined up. facility hardship goes to the top. And then ESSER funds are for tonight on tonight's agenda for board consideration. And also, California Department of Education requires that equipment and capital projects over $5,000 receive pre-approval. The pre-approval is like gold. I've talked to auditors, I've talked to others. You get that pre-approval, it's good to go as far as spending goes. Of course, the board has to approve it. So we did receive that, and it's on page 57 of the special report part of your agenda. It's an email that comes back from CDE. So you do have that comfort that it's been approved by CDE. So with that, I want to thank you for your time. Any questions or anything I could try to answer?
Mr. Dixon, I would just like to say thank you very much for the work going there. I'm really excited, once if this is approved tonight, moving forward to see what the renovation is going to look like for that existing building. It's been needed for so many years, so I'm really excited to see how we can make that a better learning environment and a better teaching environment for our staff and kids. So, thank you for everything you've done.
Oh, thank you.
To approve the use of these ESSER III funds, are there any discussion from the members of the board? If not, do I hear a motion?
Motion approved.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. A second?
Second.
Second by Doug Priddle. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. 7-0. Next item is adopt board policy 440, employee use of technology. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board the opportunity to complete the second read of the new board policy 440, employee use of technology. Brian?
So I don't have much to add after the last one. It's the same thing that you saw again. This is used by a number of districts within the state. I went out and looked at some of the districts I respect very much to see what they were doing and borrowed from them. So this is very standard from what you're going to see with districts throughout the state.
Are there any questions for Brian? If not, we need a motion to close the public hearing. Motion to close by Doug Criddle. Do I hear a second? Second by Frank Crawford. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's 7-0. Number three, adopt board policies. Oh, sorry about that. We need now a motion to approve and adopt board policy 440. Do I hear any more discussion? Do I hear a motion? Motion approved by Doug Criddle. Do I hear a second? Second by Mr. Boom. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now number three. Adopt board policy 6163.4, student use of technology. It's a second read. Brian?
Once again, just made some very minor changes on this one, just updated. This is one we've done much more recently, but with distance learning and everything, we wanted to make sure that we had everything covered with all the amount of technology that we're now checking out and sending home. We wanted to make sure that everything was in there, and I think this does that.
Any questions for Brian? If not, I need a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Frank Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Hasey. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Opposed? Now, we need a motion to approve and adopt board policy 6163.4. Do I hear a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Ms. Hasey. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Randy Rasmussen.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you, Brian. Education Services, first read. Board Policy 0415, Equity. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board the opportunity to complete the first read of the board policy. Hi, Amy.
Hi. My name is Amy Stratton. I'm the Interim Director of Curriculum Assessment and Accountability. Tonight, I'm just going to introduce the first read for the Equity Board Policy, Policy 0415. I would like to remind the board the difference between a board policy and administrative regulation. The board policy is the direction of the board, the guidance of the board. The administrative regulation is how we implement the policy. And so the administrative regulation will look different than the board policy. That's kind of where the meat and potatoes of what we do and how we do it is located. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a number of public comments on this topic. We have a 20-minute limit to the number of comments we can take. Each comment has 3 minutes. So I just ask the speakers to keep that in mind if you want more of your contingent to have a voice at the podium. So appreciate your cooperation. We have Ms. Gilmore? Kilgore. Sorry, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Catherine Kilgore. I'm a lifelong resident in Buba Center. I went to Cordova, MHS, even WT. I knew Gay Todd but when she was Miss Dunbar. So you have to be kind of old to know that. I'm here out of concern. I also have grandchildren that are in Marysville School District. Okay, there are some of you that are up in arms because you say there's no racism in Marysville. And really, that's just not true. I mean, I can cite several instances. I know the time constraint, so I'm not going to do that. But if we're being honest, it's just not true. I have a granddaughter that came home from school and said her skin was dirty because she's darker complected. That came from her classmates. So the notion that there doesn't really need to be an equity policy that would help all children is just absurd. Now, it is very concerning that there has been a deliberate effort from members of the community and, quite frankly, members of the board to somehow equate the equity policy with critical race theory. Critical race theory has not now, nor has it ever been taught in K through 12. They are not the same thing. That is a political agenda. And the last time I checked, the board members, school board members, should be separate from their political agenda. But that's not the case here. That's just not. And that's appalling. Thank you.
Bill Hyland.
Thank you. Hi, Allison. Allison can probably tell you all you want to know about me. I'm from over the river, and the reason I came over here is because a number of my friends asked me to make comments about your decision regarding the equity policy. I realize that you have already spent 3 board meetings discussing these changes, and here I am coming to you kind of at the tail end of your decision. But I have 3 questions that I consider thought-provoking that I hope you will consider, and I'm going to add a comment as an answer in these questions. The first question is, what students will actually benefit from this change in policy. And my comment is, if your answer is none, and that the motivation for this change in policy is simply to appease a politically motivated pressure group, then I think there is a serious problem. Question number two that I would like you to think about, which is probably even more important. Probably a better question would be, what students will be potentially most harmed by this policy? Is it the students who already have an extra tough time in life through no fault of their own? And I really think you need to think about that. Number three, and I would be thrilled if one or two members of the board took me up on this question. How would you personally explain this change in policy to the students in civics classes at Marysville or Lindcrest High School? Comments I have regarding this? Would the students in these classes be satisfied with your answers related to the fact that your explanation is that all of the equity policies of the original policy are now buried in administrative regulations so that they are not a visible high priority of the district as they previously were? Second comment is, what specific facts would you use to explain to them why you are making these formal changes? Is there any possible way you can describe this change in policy as a benefit to them as students? My conclusion is, I personally believe that the Marysville School District is just the first stop.
I'm sorry, you've gone over your 3 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Erica, is she still here? Connie Harris.
Members of the school board, I would like to start by saying that passing this equity policy to ensure all children have access to meaningful and equitable education is so important to members of this community that a dear friend of mine, Pamela Gaskill, decided to show up and give her speech today despite the fact that her sister passed away just yesterday. For many of us, we have a vested interest in seeing this policy passed and put into action. I grew up in Marysville for more than half of my childhood years. I've been through the school district. I've seen firsthand the lack of effort and care given to poor, low parental involvement kids of color. My middle school was often more eager to suspend and expel children than they were to nurture and provide for these hurting and in need of guidance rather than a suspension record children. For members of the community opposing this equity policy to assert that an equity policy is unnecessary or that race isn't a factor in education shows to be an element of ignorance, a lack of understanding of what it's like being a person of color in this school district. My mother is a counselor at Yuba College, and she went to Lyndhurst High School to do senior outreach and inform kids of their college options a few years back, and she saw one black senior out of the whole graduating class. It's not that there was one black child in the area who was old enough to graduate. The reality is that children were lost along the way. There was likely very little effort put into encouraging these children to finish in the way that their counterparts were encouraged. This isn't a story unique to black children. The same can likely be said for the members of the Hmong community, the Hispanic community, the Native American community, all the minority communities, since there are so many of us in this district. We are always an afterthought. And the kids know they are an afterthought. That's why they stopped trying. That's why only one black child participated in the graduation outreach that year. A proper equity policy would have provided resources to help more students accompany that black student across the stage. My older cousins from a young age would complain about how they were being ignored in their classes growing up. The teacher would see their hand and choose another child or just move on to the next topic. Would you be surprised to know that neither of them graduated high school? You can encourage progress in this district. All we are asking is that for once you see us, consider us, and see us standing here in front of you and give us a chance. Please pass the equity policy, the real equity policy, so that all kids coming through this district from now on can have a better chance at success. Thank you.
Thank you. Connie Harris.
Yesenia Katchu.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm here again to speak, and I hope that no one can diminish what I've experienced or try to overtalk what I have experienced here through this district. As I've said it before, I am here to speak on behalf of my students, but also myself. Just as many people have said, they have experienced racism. I have experienced racism here at this district, with students here at this district, and staff members who supported those students when they said it to my face. That is a huge problem in our district, and I hope that people like, I will say it again, Dr. Greco, who is one of the fantastic teachers that I have that supported me, that supported the staff member who told me, no, you're not good for college. And thousands that I am very sure of, that counselor, upon many other counselors, have denied that access to tell them, no, you're not good for this. Your last name is not going to represent us. My last name, Kachu, has been made fun of by staff members, encouraged by the children in the classroom. I am standing here to let you know that is not okay. The real equity should include race, because that is what we see here. 60% of our students are EL learners. They are brown students, minority students. I am that student. I represent those students. I really encourage you to have a conversation with one of those students. Have a conversation with me. I've worked with some of you. I know some of your families. And I really, if you know me, I am open. I'm open to have a dialogue. I'm open with my students. And I encourage you to get to know us, to connect with us. Because what is missing here is your perspective and our experience. Our experience is not to be closed, shut down, overtalked. Because this is my experience, the experience of my students, that still to today I've heard and have to deal with and have a conversation with my students about their color of their skin. And how in education, they will be faced, unfortunately, with people who are going to tell them, you're no good. No, that door is not for you. And I encourage them to advocate for themselves. So before I get told again that, good, you pulled by your bootstraps, and that's all you took. No, there was people that advocated for me. And if it wasn't for those teachers, I wouldn't have my degree.
We're sorry. Thank you. Pamela?
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. Dear members of the school board, you might recognize this provision. It was from the equity policy, which has been adopted by 90% of California school districts, but which it seems you are being pushed to discard. Somehow it has been deemed an evil aspiration. Apparently, no longer should we strive to broaden the horizon of our students, rich or poor. No longer should we strive to enrich the educational experience of the children in our district, experiences which it has been proved help children bond to one another, bond to their teachers and their schools, and build badly needed confidence. No longer should we encourage and help the children in our school district, rich or poor, to strive for higher education so that they might earn higher salaries, improve their standards of living, and pull Marysville out of the economic despair it finds itself in. Do you believe that by not extending a helping hand to our children to pursue higher education and thereby keeping people down will somehow help Marysville's overall economy? Will continuing at the same rate of low academic status, thus continuing our economic decline, somehow be good for our town? Every child who stays out of college is a child who will later bring less money to Marysville. It is one more child who will later increase the number of substandard homes that spill into richer neighborhoods, thus lowering property value of homes in more and more neighborhoods. It is one more child who may fall into crime and homelessness. It results in less tax money to repair crumbling infrastructure. All blights to our community. Because for some reason, we have suddenly deemed it beneath ourselves to give a helping hand to all our children. So many of us are looking at these shenanigans with amazement, wondering greatly what kind of game the school board is being pushed to play here. Is it a political game? Is it some kind of ideological game? We're talking about the lives, the well-being, the future of our children. We're talking about the very future of our town. If people want to play their games, dear members of the school board, bid them play them elsewhere, not sacrifice our children on the cross of their political ambitions. We earnestly request that you bring the equity policy, which reasonable minds in 90% of the state have adopted, back to the table and just adopt it.
Thank you. We have time for just a couple of more comments. Susan, Alan.
So, honored members of the school board, I do actually believe in your inherent good intentions and desire to do the right thing and sympathize that you might be pushed by radical elements of our population to cast aside the equity policy which most of California has adopted and adopt what is clearly a thinly veiled denial of the equity policy. Consider, for example, the change here. This was in the top and the old equity document, adopting curriculum and instructional materials that accurately reflect the diversity among student groups. To what now? Adopt curriculum and instructional materials? Is that a joke? Why would such a statement even find place in an equity document? Is this anything less than a bold declaration that diversity and inclusion is being thrown by the wayside? How many students need to be conducted? How many studies need to be conducted again and again that prove that students perform better when their own self-image is elevated? When students of Hispanic, Black, Hmong, and Sikh background see people just like themselves mirrored in their books? Huge percentages of our population are made of children from these backgrounds. How many decades have we striven and still not entirely achieved to give all children the self-confidence they so desperately need by seeing themselves represented? And now, with a stroke of a pen, our district wants to wipe out this progress? In these tumultuous times, race issues in Yuba Center have been in the national spotlight. Just recently, in fact, racism here made the front page in the Washington Post. Is this really what we wish to become known for nationwide? Members of the school board, you yourselves know that our demographics are swiftly changing, and that the diversity of our city will soon become so great that all this posturing will become revealed for what it is, and it will be scorned. Do you really want to go down in history as a school board that tried to set back the clock of fairness, inclusion, and progress? Is this what you want your legacy to be? Is this what you want your grandchildren to remember about you? 90% of California school districts have adopted the equity policy that was originally set before you. Please, honored members of the school board, put it back on your agenda and accept it. Thank you.
Thank you. Joanna?
Yeah, here we go. Just so you guys know, the comments that I hear through while I'm speaking is very inappropriate and unprofessional. And I'd like for you guys to ask them to stop. And my time shouldn't be starting right now. The behavior needs to stop. The ridicule, you want to talk about racism? They're doing it right now. They're making their chicken shit comments right now while I'm up here talking, and it's wrong. Number two, when we talk about racism, and you had your past equity comments, or the board policy, it listed out a myriad of different races. It did not list white. If you can substitute any race for that white and it be okay, this policy is wrong. Let me explain. If you take out black, African Americans, you take that out, we're going to help the Hispanics, we're going to help the Hmongs, we're going to help the white kids, we're going to help all these kids, but we're not going to help them, that is wrong. So the policy that you guys changed to say that all students, and everybody up here has said that, we need them all to be helped. When a child asks for help, they should be helped. So when you talk about, you know, it being equal, my skin's not white. We're all immigrants. That's what this country was founded on, was immigration. All of on both sides of my children, you saw them, both sides of my children, they were immigrants. So all of us are. And that's the way it needs to be. And we're not asking that any child be discriminated against. We're asking that if a child needs help, those children, no matter what their demographics, no matter what their race is, no matter what, they need to be helped. And for the people who are saying there's racism here, those teachers, those adults that are doing that to any of these students needs to be stopped. It is wrong on every single level. I commend you that you want to help them. On the positive side of it all. That's what needs to happen. We need to have those positives. Anybody who is mistreated, no matter what their race is, it's wrong. And I think all of us in this room agree to that. So I'm not sure where the whole offshoot has gone. I agree with your policy. I agree with what your changes are. It talks about the choice of curriculum. I would personally be involved, as I know there's other people, I would personally be interested in helping to choose that curriculum and to see what it goes, you know, how it goes down the line. Thank you.
Thank you. This is an informational item. Remove the number 2, adopt board policy 5116.1, intra-district open enrollment. The public hearing is open. Joanna? Oh, sorry.
Oh, I didn't know if there was any questions for me. Hi,
sorry.
I'm Jolie Critchfield.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, we are just updating our inter-district policy to reflect kind of our priorities for enrollment and looking at that. So, if you have any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Joanna?
Okay.
Any comments from the board? If not, do I hear a motion to close the public hearing? Well, several people, Mr. Boone. A second?
Second.
Second by Doug Quiddle. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Now I need a motion to approve and adopt Board Policy 5116.1. Do I hear a motion?
Motion approved.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hasey. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 7-0. Now we're on number 3. Adopt Board Policy 5117, Inter-District Attendance, second read. The public hearing is open. You want to say anything, Julie? Joanna? Any discussion from the board? If not, do I hear a motion to close the hearing? Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hasey. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 7-0. Now I need a motion to approve Board Policy 5117. Do I have a motion? Okay. Gary Quiddle, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hasey. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we're at number 4. Adopt agreement with ProCare for Speech Language Pathology Services for 2021-22 and summer of 2022. Dr. Greco?
Christina Royer is going to be presenting.
Do you have any questions about the request for this service?
Are there any questions from the board?
Can you just give us a little background of what it is?
Absolutely. We've had positions open for speech and language pathologists in the district since August, and speech and language pathologist assistants, and those staff are prepared for our students to receive support with communication skills who qualify for special education services. We've had a really hard time getting all of those staff that we need for our students, and we have added a number of contracts with different non-public agencies in order to provide those services for our students. We have a number of students that are waiting for those services right now, and so we're reaching out to whatever agencies we can to build contracts with them and bring SLPs into our district to support them.
Is the fee based on the use, or is it just a set fee?
For one of the agencies, not this one, we do have a fee for the use because they have a special platform that they use. It's a virtual speech and language pathology therapy for the students. But most of the agencies, we pay per use, per student, per session for our students. So we request a maximum amount, and then we generally don't spend up to that amount.
Thank you. Any more questions? Do I hear a motion to approve?
Motion approved.
Motion approved by Frank Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Ms. Hasty. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're at business services. The energy service program update from SiteLogic. Jennifer?
Yes, I have SiteLogic here to do an update on our solar panel project, our energy efficiency program. They'll be presenting tonight.
Hello, board members. Thank you for having SiteLogic here tonight and members of the cabinet, superintendent. We just wanted to give a brief update on how the energy services project is going. And so I'm going to make it quick because it's been quite a night. But I do want to just remind the board that there was a lot of discussion about equity. And equity does come in the guise of facilities. Creating equitable learning environments is super important. And when you selected to have us do this project, that really was one of your major criteria, was the equity across the district. And so I do want to say that you've done a really successful job in selecting that, and that we are well underway in getting the equity across the district and improving the learning environment for all students. So our goal was to revitalize, optimize, and construct healthy, safe, and productive learning environments, and that's what we're doing. We're going right along. Our lighting retrofit, which was interior and exterior comprehensive to LED lighting, is completely done, over 7,000 fixtures district-wide. All of the bipolar ionization units have been installed district-wide as well, so that was our COVID fighter. All of the Lyndhurst retrofit has been done, so now it's taken from a central system to single zone. There's an after picture. More than 250 HVAC units have been replaced district-wide, and the focus on those that were a priority were based on age and indoor air quality. So you can see quite a big improvement. And then, this is the wrong one. I'm going to go ahead and tab forward because, How do I do that? We've changed up the presentation a little bit so that my partner and your energy manager can talk, but also the solar is moving along at an incredible pace of success. Pretty much everything is in the final stages except for the foothills and Covalot. We're still waiting for the master plan to be finalized there, but everything is exceeding schedule expectations at this time. So we're going to have some great stuff, and we'll make sure we celebrate that with the community. I also want to just take a quick second. We've started to enroll our student engagement portion of the program. And super thanks to Jamie Larson and Alicia Wright and Amy Stratton for their involvement in helping us facilitate this district-wide. So we're going to be trying to do, and this might change a little bit, but there's an Earth Planet Party planned for the students. We're actually going to start with a trial run on March 28th, hopefully, at Foothills with the male students, because the female students they'll be going to U of a college, I think, that day. And then we're going to be able to use them to help us as volunteers for a larger Earth Day, and that is getting ironed out right now. But we are incorporating it into the STEM curriculum, and we have a lot of enthusiasm and participation with the STEM principals that are really looking forward to seeing their students get involved with this. So we also are in the process of establishing two professional development days. Looks like we have the days picked, June 6th and 7th, and those will be for your teachers. And it's going to be, some people don't like the word boot camp, but it's going to be intense. But it's going to be a green boot camp, which is going to be hands-on learning for those teachers and how to incorporate energy and sustainability into their STEM curriculum. So we're really excited about that, and we hope to have a lot of participation. We think it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll bring back reports on those as well. So at this time, I'm going to hand over and introduce simultaneously your energy manager. This is Ryan Johnson. Ryan's got 10 years of experience in the energy field and has recently moved to California with his wife, Emily, who is getting her PhD in psychology, and their 2.5-year-old son, Jack, who is probably causing him to lose some hair and sleep. So anyways, he's on site here several days a week and is really the glue that's keeping us together and keeping us focused on incorporating not just the energy savings, but how we are going to bring forth the project into the greater school community. So I am going to introduce Ryan.
Thank you for giving me a few minutes of your time tonight. So my goal, what I'm hoping to do, is just to give you a little bit of an update of what I've been doing. Like Jennifer said, I've been working as the energy manager for about 3 months now. And so I just want to give you a little bit of insight into what I've been doing to facilitate our program. So as you can see, this first slide is showing some savings that we're seeing out of the program. One of the things that's important when you're trying to measure energy savings as part of an energy program is to establish what we like to call in the industry a baseline and a kind of a year that's normal before we start doing projects and behavioral adjustments and things of that nature to then compare against as we start moving through an energy program. And so the baseline we selected for obvious reasons was 2018-2019. That was before the pandemic. And so through this year, through the first 6 months of this academic year, we've seen $26,000 in electric savings compared to that baseline, which is a great start. As you know, we've been working to install equipment all of this fall. And so, to be honest, that's a really good start. And from my perspective, we can only expect greater things moving forward. And certainly as we go along, we'll have other utilities to update as well, like natural gas. And so, you know, that number should only get bigger. So the second thing that I wanted to show you is, as I started to get on board as an energy manager, one of the first things I did, because I came in November, was I tried to get the schools prepared for the two big breaks that we had, correct? So we have time off in November and then 2 weeks in December also, where a lot of the schools are empty or largely empty. And one of the things that I can do as an energy manager is make sure that the spaces that aren't being used aren't being heated and cooled like they would be if they were being used. And if there's other staff who are on site, that those spaces are heated and cooled. And so what you can see here is some information from PG&E. And the long and the short of it is the bigger the spike on that graph, the more energy you're using. And so what you can see is the tall spikes, which is just a normal school day. And then you can see the second little spike here, which was actually, I believe, December 20th and 21st, where we didn't have students on campus, but still had some staff. And then you can see later in the week on the 20th, I think it's the 23rd and 24th, there's no spike at all. And so that's reflective of the work that was done with Doug out of the Buildings and Grounds Department, myself, kind of collaborating to make sure that we've communicated with the different schools, figured out where we can shut things down and save energy. And so a very successful, I would say, winter break shutdown. And so the last couple slides that I want to show is just the work that we're doing at SiteLogic to create an energy dashboard for you that shows this progress that's accessible. I think that you've seen this before. So what I think has been presented before is some of the electric information from PG&E, and what we're starting to build out on our end is we're adding the other utilities. So we're adding natural gas, we're adding water, and we're also adding a section of the dashboard that shows kind of combined energy. So you can see just how much in totality we're saving. And then once solar comes online, we'll also be able to add solar to these to this dashboard. So it's all there. So you can see the work we're doing from an energy savings perspective, the work, the solar production that's happened, that'll all be there in one easy spot. So that's what I've been doing these last 3 months. It's been a pleasure working with, like I said, especially Doug and his team out of the Buildings and Ground Department, and I look forward to continuing to further that work and run this energy program the way it needs to be run. So, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions while we have SiteLogic here from the board?
Trustee Davis, I do have just a comment, and I think that last slide is one of the things that is exciting to me. It says that we're on time and on budget. When we entered into this endeavor with SiteLogic, one of the sales pitch, I guess if you want to say, is that, one, we're making a better learning and teaching environment for our students in the classroom, and the endeavor is cost neutral. So to enter into this endeavor, the district took out a significant loan, and with the intent that the cost savings annually are going to make those payments. And it sounds like currently we still are. It's over a 20-year lifespan, but I think being cost neutral for our public is a good use of our funds that we did, that we can produce much better learning environments and teaching environments and not cost the community more money. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was an informational item. Now we move to number 2, approve the right-of-way contract with the State of California Department of Transportation for the 2021-22 school year. Jennifer?
Okay. Good evening. Thank you. So this item is the intent of this item is for the board to approve the proposal from the State of California for the parcel in front of the district office that's located in front of the tunnel. I think you all know that they're working on the Highway 70 widening of the state highway, and part of that widening is going to impact the district office and our property line. And so the parcel that they're proposing to purchase from us right now is this little piece right here, the beige square rectangular. It's in front of the tunnel and the rail trestle top. It's right in front. A lot of people don't realize Marysville Joint Unified owns that piece. And here it is from the Google Earth, so you can see it a little better. There's little or no impact to the district with this piece. The price that they're offering us is $479,000, and it has been appraised. That's fair market value. We've had it vetted through our legal, so there's really not anything to dispute. And then, so I'm asking the board tonight to approve this proposal, and the next steps are going to be, I don't know if you can read that, that's tiny. The proceeds will be deposited into our special reserve fund for capital outlay projects, Fund 40, and those funds may be used for capital outlay. And then we're going to be receiving another proposal for the front of the district office. The blue line, we walked that. You might have noticed the stakes that are out there. Caltrans has come in and put in stakes, and we've walked it. Greg Taylor with transportation, Brian Williams with technology, and Doug Trower with buildings and grounds. We walked it with Caltrans, and we are yet to get that appraised and have that proposal, but that will be coming to you as soon as we receive it.
So Jennifer, that the second proposal, because I seem like I was reading in the diagram, it talked about 20 feet for like a water pipe that looks like goes through where that blue line is. So it looks like if this is land that we're going to give up, we're giving up a significant amount of parking spaces. Is that accurate?
No, that's not accurate. From what we walked with Caltrans on the second, sorry about that, Russell, it will come right up to the parking, and we'll lose a light post that we'll have to replace, and we'll also have to replace some of our brick wall, and the marquee for Marysville High School will have to be moved back. But the parking will not be impacted. It'll be close, you know. It'll hit it, but we won't lose any parking.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't think we could afford to lose parking around here.
No, it's at a premium.
Thank you.
I have a question. My understanding is a few years ago there was conversation about putting buildings, either a black box theater or classrooms, in front of the district office or toward the north, I think. anyway, towards...
It's
you're
backwards.
Looking at the Mac coming
yes.
this way. So will Caltrans purchasing the blue lines infringe on our options in that respect?
I don't know the answer to that. That would be something, if that comes to fruition, we'd have to meet with architects and design and look into that.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So do we have a, you said that one parcel was just under $500,000. So have we heard anything about what they're going to pay for this other?
Not yet. That's still being appraised.
Okay.
And they're,
okay.
Yes. I'll bring that to you as soon as I have that.
Do we have any idea when this project would be coming forward?
I believe 2024. January approximately is what Caltrans told us.
So what happened to MYCC building?
Across the street. As far as I know, it's not going to be touched. It's they're impacting our side of the highway.
Any other questions for Jennifer? If not, do I hear a motion? Motion to approve. Jeff Boom. Frank Crawford has given a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we're going to move into public comments. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker and 20 minutes time for any particular subject matter. According to public law, bylaw 9323. Seth? Is Seth here?
Hello again. I hate to rehash this. On a number of occasions, several of us have requested the optional use of masks on our children while in the classroom. Despite the exhausting and growing list of proven studies that young children are not readily at risk of acquiring COVID or spreading COVID to their classmates, their teachers, or their parents, this board continues to enforce a mandate that is not law, nor is requiring one to follow. Ask yourself why we are allowing young developing brains to be deprived of all of the oxygen that is required for healthy development. After just 20 minutes, the mask becomes saturated, no longer protects against droplets, and is slowly poisoning our children with their own exhalants. My first grader, who is 6 years old, has already become ill on 3 separate occasions this year due to recurring respiratory infections, not because of COVID, but because of daily extended mask wearing at school. I want to thank you all for that. My 4-year-old in preschool, who chooses to sleep in the same bed with her brother every single night, has been free of such afflictions because her preschool does not enforce such idiotic and unlawful mandates. We can pretend and beat around the bush that this is not political, but we all know, and anyone with a pissant-sized brain can see through the charades, The politics are polarizing, and literally every aspect of our life has been funneled through a political filter. This board and its policies are clearly no exception. Let's no longer play games, and let's call a spade a spade. While on the subject of politics and political filters, let's move to the issue of equity. Thank you for recognizing that all kids, regardless of their skin color, are worthy of receiving help. I noticed the change on board policy 0415. It now says all students instead of specific groups. Let me clear up some confusion regarding 10,000 students and community members begging for this equity. I too have been born, raised, lived, and started a family and know many in this community. To believe that the majority are asking for this is a gross falsehood. It does mention, though, that this board will adopt curriculum and instructional materials. What are those things? It states that this board will provide time with local agencies and groups to students. Who are these agencies and groups? It states that this board will hire and retain a diverse staff that reflects the demographics of our area. I guess hiring on merit and past successes no longer is more important or attractive to those responsible for hiring those teaching our children than one's skin color. How pathetic this is becoming. I ask and recommend to this board that the parents, whom are taxpayers of this public school system, have a say on the content of material that is fed to our children, not the...
Sorry, you've used your time. Thank you. I'm sorry, sir. Joanna?
Holds a carrying weight of $500,000 that you are personally liable for. We've asked you time and time again. I told you that it was going to come down to this, and it is. This evening, I'm serving each of you with a letter of intent to file claims against your bond, your criminal insurance policy, which I have a policy here, along with your oath of offices. You might not realize yet that each such you are personally liable for $500,000 in damages per claim that I've just handed you and multiple claims. So there's more than one claim in these. You could be facing federal prison time from your actions if you do not cease and desist. A downstate Illinois judge issued a ruling declaring Governor J.B. Pritzker's emergency rules for COVID-19 mitigations in school null and void, effectively stopping the state's mandate in the school buildings. Sauragan County Circuit Court Judge Raylan Griskew issued the order Friday afternoon in a lawsuit brought by hundreds of parents and more than 145 school districts who claim the mask order denies students due process. Statutory rights have attempted to be bypassed through the assurance of executive orders and emergency rules stated in a 29-page order. This type of evil is exactly what the law has intended to constrain. I don't want to see any of this to happen to you, but we will file claims on each and every one of your bonds. So, got in here, there's some literature with my attorney, Lee Dundas, who is with Thomas Rentz, that's been speaking at the U.S. Senate House with Ron Johnson. Okay, so if you guys aren't familiar with that, you might want to watch it. This is not a game anymore. This is serious now.
Thank you.
You've been served.
I don't want that, dude.
It doesn't matter.
You're served.
We're right here, just so you know.
So here we go. We've asked you guys to follow the Constitution and to avail. You do not follow the best document ever created. Mandates are not laws. Masking our children is wrong. Having a vaccination bus on campus is, again, wrong. We are serving your board members with an intent to file on the claim against the government, crime policy declarations, crime infidelity. You can all be held personally liable.
Thank you. Sandra?
I'm here to serve you with a notice of intent to file claim against your government's crime policy, declarations, crime, and fidelity, CRDS 040807. You are violating your oath to office. You swore to uphold the Constitution of America. You have no authority to create or enforce mandates. You are practicing medicine without a medical license. You are recommending medical procedures. You are abusing your power. You are depriving students and faculty of their constitutional rights. You are breaching your fiduciary duty. Illegally mandating emergency use authorization products have violated the trust of your constituents. You are violating Title VII of 1964 Civil Rights Act. You are illegally creating or enforcing policies on minors in order to attend school. You are in violation of 42 U.S. Code Section 1985, conspiracy to interfere with civil rights. This school board has voted to uphold these unlawful mandates that have interfered with the civil rights and abilities of teachers, principals, and staff. You have forced them to follow these mandates or be relieved of duty. Teachers and staff have been coerced into accepting an experimental vaccine to keep their jobs. Be on notice, you will be held fully responsible and personally liable for your actions.
Thank you. Rebecca?
Well, that was quite interesting and exciting, and it's nice to see some accountability happening within our school district with the horrible actions and the child abuse that's been happening to our children. Oh, yeah, the children. That's why we're actually here. Not about the 15 presentations that we heard about the millions of dollars that are going through this school district. How much smarter are the kids in California? That's a question I'd like to ask. No disrespect to the teachers, but let's talk about what California is ranked. How about teachers get paid according to what they actually produce? Children who know reading, writing, arithmetic. I'd like to talk about equity because I was denied 3 minutes about 2 months ago and denied again tonight. 3 minutes. Wow. There goes one. The simple truth is that America is being destroyed from within. A very few of us presently understand what is happening or know how to fight back in an effective manner. We hope to remedy the situation by doing our small part and by encouraging you to do yours. As a nation, we are stronger together. Our national motto is E Pluribus Unum. Out of many, one nation, under God, all men are created equal. And that comes from God. It doesn't come from policies. It doesn't come from skin color. It doesn't come from anything else except for the fact that we are created in God's image. And that's where that comes from. And respect comes from that. In K through 12 schools in particular, CRT rarely presents itself as CRT. Rather, it hides behind infamisms, labels such as anti-racism, educational quality, curricular contemplacency. Such methods are plainly deceitful. So I would encourage every one of you to get this book. It's written by Carol Swain. She's an award-winning author. She knows what she's talking about. She's been involved in the education system. It's called A Black Eye for America, and it actually explains what CRT, equity. I actually believe we're saying a lot of the same things. I don't want anybody, I don't care who they are, to be disrespected. I will stand up and I will push back against any of that. That sounds like a policy problem, not a racial problem. And that is something that the school district needs to deal with individually, not according to race, but according to humans. Because we're all human beings. And my eyes don't see color. So, Hodafes, Najang, Kolombe Hulicha, Safrika, Keta.
The time's up, sorry. Meeting is adjourned.